Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues. That's the name of this show, Today's Issues, on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman. Co-hosting with me today is Walker Wildman and Dr. Ray Pritchard. Ray is in Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. Is that it, Ray?
That'd be California, here I come.
No,
right?
He's right.
He's
Kansas
right.
City, Steve, Kansas City, here
Steve
I
Steve Jordahl chiming in with his song knowledge.
We did this a little earlier, and I got abused mercilessly for the next line, which is, there's got some pretty little women, and I'm going to get me one.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
That's that song you just referenced.
I don't know if that fits into Christian inspirational song or not there, but
might have just gone off the tracks at that point, right?
Nothing wrong with Pretty Little Women.
I'm not even offering any commentary. Don't even know what.
Pretty Little Women. Anyway, that's a song, the Kansas City song. Now you're talking. What song are you talking about, Ray? California, here I come.
California, here I come. That's what I would, when you said
California,
that.
Here I come. Right back where I started from.
Oh, okay. What was that? Is that from a musical?
I think it sounds like, something or
it's been around a
folk
long
song
time.
From
okay.
The Dust Bowl days.
All right. Well, anyway, appreciate everybody listening who's joining us from California to New York.
To Maine,
Florida to Alaska, where we have a lot of listeners in Alaska who listen to us on the app, the American Family Radio app. So we are going to continue with discussion of the news. Today is the National Day of Prayer. A few minutes ago, I was watching on television the ceremony from the White House, from the Rose Garden, I guess.
Yep.
Tell us about it, Steve.
Well, President Trump is again marking the National Day of Prayer with a new order. Last National Day of Prayer, it had to do with the Johnson Amendment that he got rid of. Well, he is initiating a new faith-based initiative. And according to Johnny Moore, who's a friend of ours and also on this council that advises him, his quote is, that the president is ordering every department of the federal government to work on faith-based partnerships, not just those with the faith office, representing a wide expansion of a program that has historically done very effective work and can now do even greater work. This is what President Trump had to say about that. I believe it's cut five.
Thank you very much. The Faith Initiative will help design new policies that recognize the vital role of faith in our families, our communities, and our great country. This office will also help ensure that faith-based organizations have equal access to government funding and the equal right to exercise their deeply held beliefs. We take this step because we know that in solving the many, many problems and our great challenges, faith is more powerful than government, and nothing is more powerful than God.
That was the president's statement on this new initiative that he's putting up.
Yeah, well, good for him. It looked like it was a nice ceremony there.
It was.
White House lawn.
Yeah, he.
I saw a lot of my friends on there.
Yeah.
Friends of ours, friends of the ministry, who were at the White House lawn, and I'm wondering why I didn't get an invitation.
You were there yesterday, I think.
Well, they didn't tell me. My friends didn't tell me they got an invitation. They were going, and I didn't get one.
Must have slipped their mind. Your invitation.
I could have gotten one had I wanted one.
You know, I'm sure it got lost in the mail.
I'm sure it is.
That's right.
Had to be
what happened. It's in the mail.
Next year, I'm going to that.
Invited or not.
Don't wait for an invitation. Just write that down.
Write that down. I did have the opportunity 20 years ago. You remember when Bush 1 was in?
Mm-hmm.
George W. Bush, not his father. Excuse me.
George H. W. Bush was one.
Okay, I mean the second one.
George Bush W.
George
W. Bush.
One of One of them.
I'm talking about the son.
Yes.
Okay. When he was in office, my wife, Allison's first cousin, worked for the White House.
Oh.
Not, she wasn't a cabinet position, but I mean, she worked in the White House, for the White House team, whatever. And so she got us in to see a West Wing, tour post hours, you know, like at night and everything. So I got to see the Oval Office.
Wow.
Walk right there in the Situation Room.
Yeah.
And got to see the press room and also where the British tried to burn the White House down, or did they?
They did burn the White House down in 1812.
Well, there was still, you could still see the burn marks.
Really?
Yeah, from wherever they rebuilt or whatever.
A little bit of paint should fix that up, but they haven't gotten around to it yet.
They don't want to paint it because they want to show it to people when they come see the White House. And then, they have a bowling alley there, too, but we didn't get to see that.
I guess the press room that they showed you, that used to be a pool for President Roosevelt.
Is that right?
Because
he had polio.
Well, because he wanted to swim, too.
True. I think, but wasn't it therapeutic?
It might have been. It might have been, but it was a swimming pool, and they covered it over, and now it's where the press.
And got to see the Rose Garden. So that was fascinating. So anyway, just did get an opportunity a few years back to take an after-hours tour of the West Wing of the White House. But we just heard from the president on the National Day of Prayer, and we appreciate him commemorating that there at the White House. And I did see a lot of folks that we would know, our listeners would know, they're attending the ceremony. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. You want to send us an email, go to comments@afr.net. Our email address is comments@afr.net. If you want to watch this show on the internet, we have a Facebook page and a YouTube page. So just go to either one and type in Today's Issues, and you will get be able to watch this show. And we also archive it, don't we, Walker?
We do, both on Facebook and YouTube. The video's archived, but also what you call a podcast is available at afr.net, the Today's Issues podcast. Each show every day is archived there, so you can go back and listen maybe tonight or tomorrow.
Yeah. All right, Steve, what's next?
You were talking earlier about your trip to the White House and the difficulty that the Trump administration is having from sources that just want to obstruct. There is a whistleblower that has come forward. His name is Adam Lovinger, and he has a lawyer. Whose name is Sean Bigley, who's talking about what is going on there. And I just want to read you what Fox News has to say about this, or what the lawyer said. Political opponents of President Trump have weaponized the security clearance process against him, an undemocratic power grab, stalling his nominations and systematically impeding White House operations. So the root problem, according to Bigley, which is the name of the attorney, Bigley is a good name for an attorney that's involved with Trump, is systematic partisan bias among career government bureaucrats who have openly expressed their contempt for President Trump. So this whistleblower is exposing the deep state. I paired that in my mind with a story that I found, which says that Hillary Clinton has been speaking, again, another reason why she lost the 2016 elections, and she said it likely damaged her campaign because she admitted that she was a capitalist. It says because nearly half of Democrats say they're socialists. Nearly half of Democrats, if half of the electorate says they're socialist and the liberal wing of the party is asserting control, what percentage of that do you think are among Democrats that are in the White House or that are in government? And so what we're seeing with this deep state, I have to believe, is the Saul Alinsky-type rules for radicals employment of weaponizing different parts of the government to impede this president's progress, as this whistleblower, Adam Lovinger, has asserted.
Hey, Ray, I was going to ask, and we're just guessing here, but how long do you think Hillary Clinton is going to go on talking about why she lost, whether it be taking responsibility or blaming? Either way, don't you think at some point she and everybody just needs to move on?
Well, everybody, most of America has moved on. In fact, you know, even a lot of the Democrats, they don't want to hear this anymore, right? They don't want, look, she lost because she was a terrible candidate. Because in the last few weeks, she didn't bother with Michigan, she didn't bother with Wisconsin. Isn't it true, Walker, that if she wants to know why she lost, she should just look in the mirror, that she was an awful candidate? And did I just hear you say that she's blaming the fact that she called herself a capitalist? That's one of the reasons that she lost?
Yeah, she was on a doing an interview, and the interviewer said, do you think that perhaps because you're branded a capitalist, I'm looking at the wrong paper, that's why I can't find it here, Hillary Clinton agreed Wednesday that being a capitalist likely damaged her 2016 campaign. Probably, Clinton said to the shared values leadership, it's hard to know, but if you're in Iowa caucuses and 41% of Democrats are socialists or self-described socialists, and I'm asked, are you a capitalist? And I say, yes, but with appropriate regulations and appropriate accountability, you know, that probably gets lost, and the, oh my gosh, she's a capitalist breaks through. So, yes.
So she's blaming being a capitalist, or if saying that.
It hurt her.
She had completely lost touch with reality.
I don't know, Ray, because what I'm seeing from the way that the deep state is working, what I'm seeing for the if 50% of Democrats say that they're socialists, and I would guess 80% of Democrat leadership on the left would say the same thing. Those are the ones that are pulling the levers against Mr. Trump.
Steve, does that mean that she's saying that she called herself a capitalist and therefore the Democrats, her own people, wouldn't vote for her?
That's what she's saying.
Yeah. And you know, you would think, it seems like when we talk about this, at least the Democrats will act like capitalists and maybe do like the Republicans and campaign on one thing and do another. But they're just outright saying it. She's outright saying it. I should have run on a socialist ticket. Like Bernie Sanders.
I don't recall. I recall the question coming up during the election when someone asked Bernie Sanders, can you tell me the difference between a Democrat and a socialist? And he couldn't.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
The revolution tactics that are being used are out of the socialist manual. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing this playing out.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that the large socialist movement within the Democrat Party, this is what the deep state is running on, and this is what President Trump wants to get out.
Steve, just for the sake of our listeners, when we use the term deep state, how would we define it? How do we describe what that actually means?
These are partisan people within government, career people, not political appointments, that are working behind the scenes to do things like as is alleged here, slow down the nomination process by gumming up the security clearance process, those kind of things, and fighting and releasing leaks that are damaging to the president. These are people that can influence the direction of government because of their position in government, and they're doing it surreptitiously and illegally.
Mm-hmm. The deep state term is often undefined, but yeah, what it means is just what you said. See, these are people, the vast majority of federal government employees vote Democrat. Okay, that's the first thing. Because their livelihood depends on a big federal government.
Right.
Washington, D.C. is in the middle of Maryland and Virginia, and those states. That area is heavily Democrat.
Yeah, anyway. And the federal government, but also federal government employees, of course, are spread out across the country. And you know, I'm not making a blanket statement that they're bad people by any means whatsoever. I'm just saying, I'm stating a fact that their politics are Democrat. So you take that, and those people, you know, 95% of the people in those bureaucratic agencies are those agencies that bureaucrats work at in Washington, D.C., for example, they don't change because of presidency change, because a Republican's now in because of Democrats. Same people that were working for the Obama administration are working for the Trump administration. You see what I'm saying? Because their role is not really a political one. Now, if those people are agenda-driven, or they see President Trump as the enemy and the Trump people that are coming in around them as the enemy, they might engage in activities which are subversive to the president as much as they can get away with it. You know what I'm saying? And not be fired or not be caught.
This is the difference.
That's what we're talking about.
This is the difference, because you're right. These career people have served under Republican and Democrat presidents alike. I think it's like a lawyer. If you're a lawyer and you're defending a somebody on a robbery charge, you might not agree with the guy. You might think he's guilty of sin. You might think that his politics are wrong. You might think he's just a dastardly bad person. But your job is to defend him.
Right.
So in government service, these people who are at these positions of influence, their job is to carry out the direction of the administration on down. That gets pushed down from the political appointees that President Trump or a Republican president puts in. He directs the Justice Department or whatever department to do certain things. Their job is to get that done, whether they agree with it or not. And they shouldn't have to agree with it.
Right.
You can be free to say, I don't like it, but okay, I'm going to do it. Everybody has to do that occasionally if they work for somebody else. But what's happening now is they feel so enraged at the whole Trump thing that they are now saying, no, I'm not going to do it that way. I'm going to push back.
Yeah, and traditionally, who refused to carry out the president's agenda would simply resign and wait for the next administration, which they can implement the agenda. But these folks are staying in for the sole purpose of blocking the Trump agenda.
And the other thing is, Ray, we were talking about Hillary Clinton. That's how this conversation started. Hillary Clinton has blamed, you know, I guess it's a new week, another blame. Find a reason why I didn't win. She said that it would have helped her or hurt her campaign that she wouldn't identify herself as a socialist.
Right.
Ray, do you think that socialism... that is basically big government takeover of our American way of life in the name of taking care of everybody.
Right.
That's how Bernie Sanders sells it. You know, we're going to take care of everybody, and that's compassion, and that's what we should be doing here in America. So therefore, you know, we need to tax people at 90% or whatever, the rich, quote, the rich, and so we provide jobs for everybody and health insurance for everybody and food for everybody and, you know, all those things. So that's really contrary. No, it's not really. It's absolutely contrary to the, quote, American way that we've always known here in this country, and that is capitalism, that is free enterprise system, that is you're unshackled to go and be successful and make money and hire people and enjoy your life and the fruits of your labor. But it does appeal, Ray, to I don't know what percentage of Americans now. This is kind of scary. There's 20, 30, 35%, I guess, of Americans that it appeals to when you tell them, hey, are you for taxing people at an extraordinarily high rate so that we can take care of every American in every way from cradle to grave? That appeals to some people.
You know, they're two opposite things at work here, Tim. Number one, America was founded on free enterprise capitalism.
Right.
That's what that's the foundation of our nation. And there's the second thing. Americans, by nature, we are a generous people.
Yes.
We're a generous nation. And so it kind of depends on how you ask the question.
Yes.
If you ask the question, do you think we ought to care for the sick and the dying and the hurting and the abused, and do you think we ought to reach out a helping hand for people who are down on their luck? Americans instinctively are going to answer that question yes, but that does not mean that Americans favor socialism. Tim, wouldn't you say that even though we've been adrift, wouldn't you say we're still basically a center right nation?
Yeah, I would say so. But yeah, I would say that. Center right nation.
We're wavering, maybe. You
know, now, the left has become more hardened in their positions. There's no longer a conservative Democrat in Washington, D.C., for example. They purged their party of anybody who doesn't subscribe to the secular progressive movement. Democrats have.
I would say 50%+ of America, maybe between 50 and 55, is center right.
Yeah.
And we're moving left, as Ray said. But the reason I say that is because if you look at all the victories that the Democrats and the liberals have gained over the past 10 or 20 years, it's all through the judicial system and executive branch, etc. None of it's not much, with the exception of California and New York and some of those states who'd actually get liberal legislation through. Most of it is done without the people's voice being heard. I mean, Proposition 8 was upheld in California, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
08?
Yeah. It's quite remarkable, really, if you think about it, that the country still is center right. That is to say, you look at the House of Representatives, you look at the Senate, you look at the White House, for example, all controlled by Republicans. Now, not all Republicans are conservative, but I think that's fair to say all Republicans are center. They're either center or they're right. And if you look at that breakdown, you know, you got to say, that the left is in the minority, but they do control the coast. You know, they do control the coast of our country. But anyway, we will. But I think there is a significant percentage of the Democratic Party, if not all, that basically do subscribe to socialism, and they do it in the name of compassion. They can do a great job of selling it. Bernie Sanders gets out there on the campaign trail. He draws thousands of people to come hear him say how Americans ought to take care of everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, that pulls at your heartstrings. You know, some of the stories that he can bring up. But you know what? You have to step back and say to yourself, what is the best for the most? We can all find individual stories where capitalism has failed, for example. Mm-hmm. Or exploited people, but you can do, if you want to look at socialism come to life, you can check out Venezuela if you want to. if you've ever seen some pictures from there. So you have to consider what is the best for the most.
And what's the best way to deliver it, because center right and conservatives say that, and President Trump today with his initiative is kind of also going down this path, that there's private enterprise, there's churches, there's organizations that are better poised to deliver this help to the poor and the needy than a government program, which never really ends up being cost effective.
I would like the socialist Democrats to point out to me a better country in the world where they would say, let's model America after, and then fill in the blank. Give me three good places around the world where we can change America to look more like, and then fill in the blank, and then we can look at what their model is.
Because if it works.
Because I think if you look around the world, the envy of the world is still the United States of America for many, many different reasons, not the least of which is you still get to keep most of your money that you earn, and property rights, and religious freedom, and all those things that our founders came up with as the rights of the American citizen. Ray, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tim.
Walker, Steve.
Yes, sir.
My pleasure.
And we thank you folks for listening to American Family Radio. Today's a National Day of Prayer. Hope you commemorate that and celebrate that in one way or another. We shall see you back here tomorrow for Trivia Friday. Have a good day, everybody.